All right, so imagine this. You're a law student, maybe even a brand new lawyer, and you find yourself neck deep in a lease dispute.
Always a fun time, right?
Yeah, not exactly a beach vacation. And your client's stuck in a lease where the landlord's gone and broken a big promise, a key part of the deal.
Happens more often than you'd think.
Exactly. So the question is, can a broken promise, a breach of contract in fancy legal terms, actually be big enough to let your client walk away from the whole thing? Like, just completely ditch the lease. Today, we are going deep, deep, deep into a California case that lays down some crucial groundwork for exactly this kind of scenario. It's called Medico Dental Building Company versus Horton Converse, a 1942 decision from the California Supreme Court.
Ah, a classic.
Absolutely a classic. And it's not just history. This case sets some precedents about exclusive rights and leases and what we call material breach. Basically, how badly a promise has to be broken for it to really matter legally.
Yeah, and the logic the court used is still cited all the time.
Still super relevant. So let's break it down just like we always do, piece by piece. In this case, we've got a pharmacy, Horton and Converse, that leased space in, you guessed it, a medical building. And their lease, their agreement with the landlord, gave them something pretty important.
It did. They had the exclusive right to be the only pharmacy operating in that entire building.
Exactly. No competition from other drugstores. So picture this. You're Horton and Converse, you're setting up your pharmacy, you're counting on this exclusivity to draw in customers from the whole building.
Makes sense.
But then the landlord, Medico Dental Building Company, goes and does something. Well, something not so great for Horton and Converse. They lease out some space to a doctor.
A doctor with a side hustle, I'd say. This doctor, Dr. Beanshaft, had a medical office, which is normal enough in a medical building, right?
Right. Seems logical.
But here's the twist. He also ran a pharmacy right there in his practice,
Yes.
selling drugs directly to his patients.
Direct competition for Horton and Converse, right under their noses in the same building.
You can see where this is going. Not a happy situation for Horton and Converse.
No, not happy at all. And our deep dive today is all about understanding what happened next. We're going to look at the legal principles at play, the ideas of dependent covenants and material breach, how these ideas were used to untangle this mess, and why it still matters for law students, even lawyers who've been at it for a while, to really grasp these concepts.
Because, lease disputes, they never really go out of style.
Sadly true. All right, so let's rewind a bit, back to the lease agreement itself.
Back to the scene of the crime, so to speak.
Exactly. So Horton and Converse, they agreed to pay rent for their space. Pretty standard stuff.
Basic lease 101.
But in exchange, Medico Dental, the landlord, they made a pretty big promise, that exclusive right to run a pharmacy in the building. And it wasn't just like, oh yeah, you'll probably be the only one. They put it in writing.
He did. They included what's called a restrictive covenant. Basically, a clause in the contract that specifically forbade Medico from leasing space to any other pharmacy.
So it was really clear this wasn't just an expectation, it was a legally binding promise.
Black and white. The court really emphasized later on that this exclusive right was a stipulated material condition.
Meaning.
It was a fundamental part of the deal, not just some minor detail. It went to the heart of why Horton and Converse signed the lease in the first place.
Got it. So it was a big deal. But then Medico messed up. They went ahead and leased that space to Dr. Boonshaft. And as we've said, Dr. Boonshaft wasn't just some doctor with a little medicine cabinet.
No, he was running a full-fledged pharmacy out of his office, filling prescriptions for his patients right there.
Putting him in direct competition with Horton and Converse. Now, Horton and Converse, to their credit, didn't just sit back and watch their business go down the drain.
They spoke up, they protested, they went straight to Medico and said, "Hey, this is a violation of our lease. You promised us exclusivity."
You promised, right. But here's where it gets even more interesting. Even after Horton and Converse officially complained, Medico didn't do much to stop Dr. Boonshaft.
They kind of dropped the ball. This inaction on their part, that's what we call a big oof in legal terms.
Yeah, a big oof. It became a key factor in how the court ultimately decided the case. Now, Horton and Converse, they felt like they were getting a raw deal. They'd been promised exclusivity. It was the whole point of being in that building.
Their whole business plan was built around it.
And Medico wasn't holding up their end of the bargain. So what did they do? They stopped paying rent. And eventually, they moved out. They said, enough is enough.
A bold move.
It was. And as you might expect, Medico wasn't too happy about it. They sued Horton and Converse for the unpaid rent. They said, hey, you signed a lease, you gotta pay up.
Classic landlord move.
Right. But here's where we really get into the meaty legal stuff. This whole dispute boiled down to a central question.
A question that goes beyond just this one lease and touches on a fundamental aspect of contract law.
Exactly. The question was that promise of exclusivity, the promise that Horton and Converse would be the only pharmacy in the building, was that promise a dependent covenant?
Ah, the million-dollar legal term.
Right. What does that even mean? In simple terms, a dependent covenant is like a super-duper important promise in a contract. So important that if one party breaks it in a big way, the other party is off the hook. They don't have to keep their end of the bargain.
Imagine you buy a car.
Okay, I'm buying a car.
You promise to pay the dealer, right?
Sure do.
But that promise is dependent on them actually giving you the car. If they take your money and don't hand over the keys, well, you're not obligated to just keep throwing money at them.
Makes sense.
It's the same principle in this lease case. Now, usually, the obligation to pay rent, it's seen as independent. You occupy the space, you pay rent, even if there are other little disagreements with the landlord.
So like a leaky faucet wouldn't get you out of paying rent.
Exactly. But in Medico Dental, the court was looking at whether this exclusivity promise was different. Was it so essential that breaking it was like the dealer not delivering the car?
That's the question. So Horton and Converse, they're arguing that because Medico broke this super important promise, this dependent covenant, they were no longer obligated to pay rent. They were justified in walking away.
And the court? Drum roll, please.
Drum roll.
The court agreed with Horton and Converse. They bought the whole dependent covenant argument.
Wow. They actually said that.
They did. The court's majority opinion reasoned that for Horton and Converse, having that exclusive right to operate without competition, that was the entire point of leasing that particular spot in that building.
It was the whole consideration, right? The whole reason they were willing to pay rent in the first place.
Absolutely. Their entire business model, everything they'd planned, relied on that exclusivity. The court understood that. They said losing that protection, having a competitor right there in the building, that caused continuing financial loss. And get this, they acknowledged that this kind of loss, it's almost impossible to calculate precisely. How do you measure all the potential customers you might have lost to the competition?
You can't put an exact dollar amount on it.
Exactly. And the court, they took that into consideration. They even said something really interesting. I'm going to quote them directly here. They said, covenants should be construed to effectuate the party's intentions. Basically, they were saying it's not just about the strict legal wording of the lease. It's about understanding what both parties, both Medico and Horton and Converse, what they really meant to accomplish when they signed that agreement.
It's about reading between the lines, getting to the heart of the deal.
Exactly. And that's a really powerful concept for anyone working with contracts. Courts don't just look at the words on paper. They try to understand the spirit of the agreement, the intentions behind it.
That's huge. So it's not just about individual clauses. It's about the fundamental exchange of value.
Exactly. Which brings us to a really key question. How did the court get around the usual idea that rent obligations are independent? Because, like we said, the normal rule is you occupy the space, you pay the rent, regardless of minor issues. So how did the court justify making an exception in this case?
That is the million-dollar question. So they're saying this exclusivity promise was so fundamental that it actually overrides the typical independence of rent.
They are. And their reasoning was pretty clear. The court basically said that in this specific situation, Medico's breach, their failure to uphold the exclusivity promise, it went way beyond just a minor inconvenience. It wasn't like a leaky faucet or a broken elevator. They said it went to the very root of the contract. It completely destroyed the purpose of the lease from Horton and Converse's perspective.
Because without that exclusivity, what was the point of them being in that specific building in that specific location?
Exactly. Their whole reason for choosing that space, for agreeing to those terms, it was all based on having no competition from other pharmacies.
So it wasn't just a small problem. It was like the foundation of their agreement had crumbled.
Precisely. It was a material breach, not some minor issue. Now, Medico, they didn't give up easily. They tried another legal argument.
Oh, I bet they did. What was their next move?
They tried to say that Horton and Converse waited too long to complain about Dr. Boonshaft's pharmacy.
So they were trying to use the delay tactic.
Basically. They argued that because Horton Converse didn't object right away, they had essentially waived their right to complain later on, like they'd accepted the situation.
But did the court buy it?
Nope, they didn't. The court found that Horton and Converse acted reasonably promptly. They didn't wait an unreasonable amount of time. Once they confirmed what was really going on with Dr. Boonshaft's pharmacy, they took action. There wasn't this long delay that made it seem like they were okay with the competition and then suddenly decided to complain just to get out of the lease.
So Medico's delay tactic didn't work. Now, this case gets even more interesting because there's also a concurring opinion from one of the justices, Justice Edmonds.
Yeah, and this concurring opinion, it adds another layer of nuance to how we think about this case.
Oh, juicy legal details. I love it. Tell me more. What did Justice Edmonds have to say?
Well, he ultimately agreed with the majority decision. He agreed that Horton and Converse was justified in getting out of the lease, in what we call rescinding the contract. But his reasoning put a slightly different emphasis on why.
Interesting. So two different paths to the same conclusion.
Exactly. While the majority really focused on the initial agreement, on the fact that the exclusivity promise was so central and that breaking it was a material breach, Justice Edmonds was really interested in Medico's actions, or rather, inactions, after the breach happened.
So he was looking at what they did after the fact.
Exactly. He argued that Medico's failure to do anything substantial to stop Dr. Boonshaft, even after Horton and Converse complained, that essentially amounted to a tacit waiver of their own responsibilities under the lease.
So it was like they were giving up their right to enforce the lease by just standing there and watching the problem unfold.
Precisely. It's a slightly different angle, but it leads to the same outcome.
So to sum it up, the majority focused on the initial contract and the nature of the broken promise, while Justice Edmonds was also looking at what happened after the breach, what the breaching party did or didn't do in response.
That's a really insightful way to put it. And it means that in future cases, courts might consider both the initial breach itself and the actions or inaction of the party who broke the promise.
It's all part of the big picture. Now, stepping back from all the legal jargon, it seems like the court in Medico Dental was implicitly asking themselves a few key questions, almost like a checklist when you're analyzing a situation like this.
I like that, a checklist. It's a good way to break it down.
So first, they were considering whether the exclusivity was truly essential to Horton and Converse's business. Was it their main reason for leasing that particular spot?
That's a big one. Was the exclusivity the heart of the deal?
Second, they were looking at whether Dr. Boonshaft's pharmacy actually caused significant harm to Horton Converse's business. Was it really affecting their bottom line?
Not just a minor annoyance, but real tangible harm.
Right. And third, the court considered whether the financial damage from this competition was easy to calculate. Could you put an exact dollar amount on it?
Because sometimes the harm is ongoing and difficult to quantify.
And finally, they looked at whether Medico did anything to address the breach after Horton and Converse complained. Did they try to fix the problem?
Or did they just ignore it?
All crucial factors. Now, you might be thinking, okay, this is all well and good, but I'm not dealing with pharmacies and medical buildings.
Fair point. This case is from 1942, after all.
Exactly. But here's why it matters, even today. These principles, they apply to all kinds of modern scenarios. Imagine a situation with a local coffee shop.
Everyone loves coffee.
True. So this coffee shop, they sign a lease in a new office building. And a key part of their deal is an exclusive right to sell coffee in that whole building.
No Starbucks allowed.
Exactly. But then the landlord goes and leases a big space to a fancy new co-working company. And guess what?
They have their own in-house cafe.
Yep, complete with gourmet lattes and cappuccinos, direct competition for our little coffee shop. So now we can apply the principles from Medico Dental.
It's like a legal puzzle.
It is. So is the competition from the co-working cafe direct enough to actually hurt the coffee shop's business? Was that exclusivity clause a major reason why they chose that location and agreed to the rent?
Was it a deal breaker?
Exactly. And could you easily calculate how much money the coffee shop is losing because of this new competition? Or is it more like a gradual ongoing loss of potential customers? And importantly, did the landlord try to do anything to address the situation after the coffee shop raised concerns?
Did they even try to find a solution?
All these questions stem from that Medico Dental case. If the coffee shop could show that the exclusive right was super important to their lease, a dependent covenant, and that the co-working cafe was causing real harm, and that the financial losses were hard to calculate, well, they might have a good argument to break the lease, just like Horton and Converse.
a classic David and Goliath situation, with some legal precedent on David's side?
Exactly. So what are the big takeaways for all you aspiring legal eagles out there? First, remember that contractual intent matters. It's not just about the words on the page, it's about what the parties really meant to accomplish. And these restrictive covenants, those clauses about exclusivity, they're not just filler language.
If they're truly essential to one party's business, courts will take them seriously.
Very seriously. But proving a breach is material, that it's a big enough deal to break the contract, that's not easy. It's not enough to just say, hey, they're doing something I don't like. You have to show that the breach has fundamentally undermined the whole purpose of the agreement.
It's got to be a big deal, not just a minor annoyance.
Right. And as we saw in Medico Dental, sometimes suing for damages for money, that's not enough, especially if the harm is ongoing and hard to measure. In those cases, the ability to rescind the contract to walk away might be the most appropriate solution.
It's about finding the right remedy for the situation.
And understanding the difference between dependent and independent covenants, that's crucial. So there you have it, folks. Medico Dental Building Company versus Horton and Converse. A case about a pharmacy, a doctor, and a broken promise that continues to shape how we think about exclusive rights and material breach and lease agreements even today.
It's amazing how a case from so long ago can still be so relevant.
It is. It shows how important these fundamental principles of contract law are. They're not just abstract concepts. They have real-world implications for businesses, for individuals, for anyone dealing with contracts.
Absolutely. And that's what makes studying law so fascinating. It's about understanding these principles and how they play out in real life.
Couldn't have said it better myself. So to wrap things up, the key takeaway from our deep dive today is this. If an exclusive right is truly fundamental to a lease agreement, if it's a dependent covenant, then breaking that promise can have major consequences. It could give the other party the right to terminate the entire lease.
And that's a powerful tool for tenants to have in their arsenal.
It is. So here's a final thought for all you future lawyers out there. In today's complex world of commercial leases with all their intricate details, how can parties ensure that the most vital parts of their agreement, those deal breakers, are clearly defined as dependent covenants? And what steps can tenants take to proactively protect their exclusive rights to build a strong legal position if a breach does occur?
Those are the questions to ponder, the kind of questions that keep lawyers up at night.
And that's what makes this field so exciting. Always something to think about, always a new challenge. Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive today, and we'll see you next time for another fascinating legal adventure.
Until then, happy lawyering.